So today's topic is naked women.
Yes. So my theory is that the Pareto distribution, right? And the Freudian iceberg theory between, what's conscious and what's subconscious is basically describing more or less the same thing.
Do you want to elaborate on that? I was just listening to Kitty Goodell talk about how he thought the iceberg theory is not quite right. It's more like a spiral rather than a linear thing. But anyway, that's another topic. Go ahead and
No, because
elaborate.
I was thinking about some stuff that I read in Sloterdijk's new book. And so he talks about the role that beggars and work people working on the streets, prostitutes, or the artists that fighting for their lives, what their role is for society as a whole, because in Sloterdijk's view, it's like they provide so much information and memes and things for the immune system of society that you can't think a society without them, right? And so it's like all these transfer informations, memes, whatever, money, whatever you can think of. So they're like the kid in between of the jobs that kind of are orderly and set up by the bureaucratic society. And so, you can't have, and so I was kind of thinking in terms of, okay, so what does it mean? You have lots of podcasters, you have lots of writers that are fighting for, to make a buck basically, and to find, a way to live in our society. And that's the huge majority, if you think about the Pareto distribution.
Yeah,
And so,
like
for example,
musicians. I was a musician for a long
yes,
time, and almost
even
no musicians make any money at all, even though
exactly.
they put in almost all of their creative intellectual energy into that project. They almost invariably fail,
Right. Yeah,
unless
so
except for the one percent who
exactly.
become mega rich.
Exactly. And so the ideas that I think I we talked about this, that if you are like a tennis player at the tour and you are like number 500, you earn no money at all. That is insane if you think about it. So even if you're number 400 in the world, you earn nothing. And so you start to earn with, it's if you're like 350, then you start to earn some money, which is insane, because that is basically true for every endeavor, that you have to be within the top 400 of everything, of writing, of podcasting, of painting, of everything to earn. And that's a Pareto distribution, because the huge majority of people earn nothing with it, have no influence. But it's not true, because you can't have the top 1 to 5% without the other 95 to 99%. So that's just like it's the same ratio as the conscious thing above the surface, the iceberg, and the big societal subconscious, which is the vast majority of artists and trying to hash out new ideas, philosophers, thinkers, and so you have basically the same distribution and the same kind of thing. So, the top 400 people of every kind of societal endeavor, they represent the conscious part, the people we are talking about in music, in philosophy, in art, whatever. And then you have the whole corpus of people that are.
So in other words, you're saying that Taylor Swift is the most conscious person in the world right now.
Yes. It represents, obviously she represents if the most common denominator of what is conscious now, what we're supposed to have, as a symbol of who we are now. That's
Yeah, which
obvious.
brings us back to the woman. Well, I was analyzing. I'm doing my final essay on the tarot, and the last tarot card is the world, and the world is represented by a naked woman, right?
Yeah.
And she's kind of, in this erotic dance of some kind. And usually, and I was thinking, what does that mean? And it's also the same symbol. The naked woman is the same symbol as like the liberty symbol in the French Revolution. It's this woman with one breast holding a flag and charging into the crowd. And then, and I was trying to think, what does this really mean? And then you have Taylor Swift as being the ultimate Barbie of the Barbies, you know, with her microphone. Yeah. You know, it's, in a way, it's the same archetype. It's youth in its prime. It's the full expression of what is desired, the most desirable expression, I suppose. You know,
imagine Taylor Swift would have like a sloppy tit.
The sloppy tit hanging out. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that, maybe that's what's missing from her performance.
Barbie of all Barbies to for the nipples to point upwards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's they always have to point upwards, don't they?
Yeah, they have to.
So,
no, but obviously, so you have, you say it, we live in a Barbie age, at least for a second now.
Yeah.
And so you have Barbie of Taylor Swift, and that says something about the collective consciousness.
It does, but that it also says that you should avoid sort of aiming it towards that.
No, but nobody is aiming for anything. I'm just saying what is conscious right now.
Yeah. Right? Which is the lowest common denominator in a way. I mean, I have nothing against Taylor Swift, but she's not that talented, you know, and she doesn't have anything to say, and she's kind of hot.
You could make the case that she's talented enough to to create an earthquake of millions of people that stump on the ground.
But that's not her. That's the whole team around her that is creating her as this image, as this ultimate Barbie, right?
Yeah, but you still have to pull it off. You know, it's like,
oh yeah, but you have, but she, it's not her. I mean, it is. She's just like that, right? And then she has a team of hundreds of people, right? You know, finessing and everything.
But I wouldn't be able to do that even with a team like that. That's the point. That's her.
Are you sure if you had thousands of people? I think you could. I think, Tom, you could be the Ken doll, basically. You could be like the Ken, the elderly Ken doll with the bits of gray hair.
I always find ways to fuck it up, really.
That's good. We want to fuck up slightly. Otherwise, we become completely plastic, right? Well, iceberg image. Right.
Yes.
I was listening to I think it was OG and Goodell talk about how it's not quite right. It's more like a spiral. It's more like the higher is influencing the lower, and they're going back and forth all the time in a kind of a spiral rather than being a strict hierarchy. So the unconscious is affecting the conscious, and the conscious and then they're all sort of affecting each other. And it's not like there's this hidden thing underneath, and then this is in the light. It's more like that the light and the hidden are in a dance with each other.
Obviously,
like, yeah.
Obviously, but still there's a huge part of our consciousness that is unknown, you know, and that's just represented by the iceberg. That doesn't mean that they don't influencing each other, you know. As like I think like Sloterdijk says that. Basically, 99% of our collective cognitive processing is unconscious, you know, but creating in this kind of processing, this kind of freedom and autonomy that we kind of experience in our daily awareness. But this is just part of the program, let's say.
Yeah.
And but again, it's like my initial idea or theory was that I know that this is not the normal theory of the collective unconscious, but on a societal level, it works similar, you know, because most of the people are not part of the, you know, public open conscious discourse, but the public discourse is getting enabled by, you know, all this underbelly of conversations that people have. You know, sorting things out, sift through ideas, and so that, you know.
So what do? Do you try to climb the pyramid? Do you try to get up the Pareto curve? Or do you make your own thing outside of the system? You know, like Jesus says, give the Romans what the, for give yours to the Romans, and then, you know, That's a maybe very the good question.
I don't know, because it completely hijacks the modern notion of success. That's for sure.
Yeah. Because in a way, the whole thing is unconscious. Like, Taylor Smith is, she's kind Swift. Of unconscious. Swift, sorry. She's yeah. kind of the pinnacle of unconsciousness. So that whole world is, is right. unconscious. It's not that the people at the top are conscious. They're just rich, you know.
Yeah, but okay, so let's switch to another pyramid. Let's talk about Sloterdijk, because he is pretty conscious and he is in the public discourse. So he is the philosophical equivalent to pop music, right?
Yeah.
And so he is part of the collective, let's say, conscious.
Is that because he's the best?
I don't know if he's the best, but I mean, the thing is that I love to read him, and I think lots of people love to read him because he has something very special. I don't necessarily know if he knows what it is, because that's again the same question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how conscious is Sloterdijk about what he really is doing for society?
Yeah, I don't think he is at all. And I don't think even all these people, like, okay, well, Taylor Swift, this is the pop music pyramid, right? And it's not very, it's interesting in some ways and not that interesting in others. But if I think about Bob Dylan, for example, somebody who has actual, you know, real something to say, or he moves the culture in some kind of a way. Like, you could say that Taylor Swift moves the culture in a negative way almost, right? It's like towards a lower form of intelligence, right? Whereas if you look at somebody like Bob Dylan, they raise the cultural intelligence level. But Bob Dylan, he didn't care at all about being famous. He wasn't interested in it. He was just, following his own bliss, so to speak. That's all he was doing. And he never gave a fuck. And he still doesn't, really. But he just became the best in the world. So there's two models. There's one is like the cynical model of just like, you know, and then there's the other model of just like, you don't aim for that. Or do you aim for that? You don't aim for it in that way. You aim for something else. Like, you have to aim for something else. You can't aim for that. Otherwise you get crushed.
It's interesting that you say bliss, because I think that
blisters too. Like sorry to interrupt, but I want to also add that it's blisters, not just bliss.
Right. I think the interesting thing is that Taylor Swift is a religious phenomenon, because people have religious feelings when they go to these concerts, and on a scale that is unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like this weird fusion out of religion and pop music that's going on there on a completely new scale, which signifies the Barbie Taylor Swift kind of thing, because it's
sort of paganism, isn't it? It's sort of ultimate paganism religion, I would say.
You know? Yeah, sure.
It's not Christianity, because Christianity is a little different. Like, Christianity tries to do the opposite of Taylor Swift, right? Tries to, or Islam, or they try to contain and hide and the feminine. Whereas the pagan is the absolute full on expression of garish expression of sexuality, you know.
Sure, but she draws from Protestantism. If you know, it's like the most basic kind of topics that she sings about. This is just, you know, basic Christianity. That's, you know, but if you look at the videos on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter of people attending these kind of concerts, these people have a religious experience. And this is kind of different from Bob Dylan or you know, the grunge era. You know, there's no protest there. There's no,
No, it's the opposite of protest. It's the negative Gnosticism or whatever, you know. It's like the...
Right.
It's like, I don't know, Camille Paglia compared Taylor Swift to Hitler to like a Nazi blonde at one point. And like a Nazi blonde, because there's something kind of blindly adoring in this thing. Oh, why, you know, she's just an ordinary kind of girl. And so why are you blindly adoring this person?
You know what, what's kind of strange is that she's asexual. She's not real. She is like this image that you brought up, you know, the Liberty statue and the figure from the tarot card. But in a strange way, she's asexual. She's not a sexual being. That's the, you know.
Yeah, I know what
She's
you mean. She's sort of androgynous. She's sort of, she's more like the girl next door kind of thing. Whereas it's not somebody that's oozing with sexuality like some of the other, like that Brazilian pop star or whatever her name is, or she doesn't ooze with actual sexuality. She's sort of cold.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know her, but
She
she
is
seems.
Barbie. It's interesting that this Barbie, why is this Barbie image appearing everywhere?
Right.
Why is that? There's Barbie, but there's also Taylor Swift. It's like that's Barbieism or whatever, coming to the, what does that mean that that's coming to the, what's coming coming to the surface? It feels like something sinister to me.
Yeah, I don't know about the person Taylor Swift, but I know that the public image has no vagina, and that's the interesting thing. And if I think about Taylor Swift as a woman, I think she's not be able to have an orgasm like a proper one. That's the weird thing, just as my impression, my intuition, But as a
Yeah,
pop
well,
star, she
that
doesn't have. As a
I
pop star,
would.
she doesn't have a vagina like Barbie. It's she's
It's a
like.
bit like that. She's a bit like, she's not quite a woman in that sense, right? She's not fully full on woman. She's more like a girl still, and that's the appeal. Is this? It's also the kind of a porn appeal. Is this like shaved pussy little girl thing? It's like there's something pedophilic in the whole endeavor. Perhaps I shouldn't say that.
No, but
I'm not.
I don't see that. I
No.
don't see. No, what I see is just asexuality. It's just like there's a person that is free of libido in a kind of way.
Yeah, that would be like the ironic, as that's all she's supposed to be expressing right on stage.
Yes,
So it's
exactly.
very interesting that you would say that. It's like, there is no actual libido there. It's completely mechanical or something, or it's just a show. It's a light and sound show of something, right?
Yeah, because you can point to different, female pop stars of our age or aspiring pop stars that are oozing of libido, and so you can point to those, and it's like, but Taylor Swift always has this kind of, I don't know, I think you're right if you compare it to Barbie.
Negativity, the Gellian
Yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And in a way, her wholesomeness, like she's like a nice girl or something, right? There's a way in which she's kind of normal and wholesome and kind of like an ordinary girl or something like that. This is a contrast. It's like the ultimate contrast to porn, right? Whereas everything is dirty and everything is explicit and everything is in your face. And so I think people have this nostalgia for a night kind of 1950s ordinary
Yeah.
girl, ordinary boy. That's probably what the Ken and Barbie thing is really about. It's about the desire for normality in very bizarre times, very strange times.
Yeah, I haven't seen that film.
No, I haven't seen it either, but I'm just guessing because I'm just talking about the Barbie Ken
Yeah.
archetype is oh, this is normal. Everybody wants this is normal, safe, plastic, in a box. Everybody wants that when things are fucking weird and bizarre and crazy and nobody knows where the world is going
Yeah, there's a. I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but I'm kind of through osmosis and through the movie critiques, I get a sense of what that movie is. Because, I mean, if you look at right wing critiques or left wing critiques, it's like there's a topic emerging, and it's about sexual, it's about the sexual kind of confusion, basically.
Sexual confusion.
And so, and it's the same confusion that emanates from Taylor Swift in a weird way, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but
I know what you
no,
mean.
I think
Well,
it's
it's
a.
a sort of androgyny. There's a terror to androgyny or something. Camille Paglia writes about that very well. There's this sort of Android, not male, not female, in between space that you can't really put your finger on. It has a lot of power, but
Yeah.
it has a lot of negativity as well.
But it's strange that it's, coming back to the collective conscious, that kind of woman and that kind of discourse and is front and center in our culture now. as if you know, all the, it's like, why these archetypes, you know, where is the voluptuous of sexuality oozing woman, you know, or the, where are the, why are,
where's
we
that, well, the Marilyn Monroe or something like that, or
yeah, whatever, Ava Gardner or something like this, you know?
Yeah. But they're sort of taboo at the moment, aren't they? Because it's sort of taboo. It's like, it's a weird thing with the cancel culture. It's taboo to have a sexualized object right now, but you know, you have to have sexualized objects to make money. So Taylor Swift is kind of a good safe bet.
Yeah.
For
you know,
all
what's
of that.
Interesting. You know, if I mean, I mentioned, you know, other female artists, and there two are coming to mind. So, you know that I like Noga Erez. This
she's very interesting.
And so she kind of arrived now in Hollywood, making, you know, these kinds of movies for music for movies like from Netflix. But it was dawning on me and occurring to me that she has like a very childish voice, like a voice that is not really opened up herself up to feminine power. It's a very suppressed. Have you ever listened to her?
Not really. Yeah, it's a weird sort of electronic style voice or something.
Yeah, but it's like a voice that is kind of suppressed and kind of, it's squeaking like the voice of a little child. And that's weird because she does like this adult rap, which I really like, by the way. But the point is, it's as if, you know.
And she dresses in boys' clothes too, right? You know,
big
suits and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is all very interesting. You know, that's why she's kind of an interesting artist. She plays with the gender roles, but the full on like Stevie Nicks sensuality, or I don't know what. That's just one example, but. Is somewhat taboo today.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting feminist liberation doesn't allow for untrammeled femininity.
Yeah.
Because untrammeled femininity has darkness to it and, you know, it's got both. It's not an idealized version like Barbie or Taylor Swift. It has the other side, you know?
Yeah.
So, people don't really want that. And I think it's this desire to be safe. And it's almost like a supernova. Like Taylor Swift is almost like the supernova of 80s pop or something. It's like the end of it. It's like the last big explosion of stardom, where when stardom has become so ridiculously unprovocative.
Yeah.
You know,
Don't you find it weird that, you know, the discourse about men is about how can a man be fully realized and fully masculine at the same time while being a provider and being empathetic and be a good listener and have, you know, this whole kind of thing where the same attributes are not, you know, mentioned in terms of women. So there's not a discourse about being a full-fledged, you know, woman with all the light sides and dark sides and all the libido and all of this. And so in the times of feminism, that's really strange that
it's strange that feminism is an auto censure of femininity,
like an auto what? I didn't get that.
Censure, like it's censoring itself.
Yeah. It should after 40 years of discourse, it should be different, you know, but we're still talking about, okay, what is a full-fledged man, but not what is a full-fledged woman?
Yeah, but that's because all of the ideologies on the top of the iceberg have nothing to do with what's really fucking going on, you know?
Exactly, yeah, sure.
They're just superficial. You know, all the ideologies in culture war politics and this and that, they're so ultimately superficial.
Yeah, but you have to ask. So Alexander uses the term of a sociont. You know, it's like a flock or like a swarm that moves, you know, in directions like a flock or swarm of birds or whatever, and you can't really predict where the swarm is going because it goes. So, but why is it that we're focusing so much of this asexual type of the woman? Why is it? It's so strange to me. You know, it's like, after all this discourse, what, you know, woman should be or could be. Yeah, you should be asexual.
Yeah, after all the discourse of what women should be or could be, we end up with Barbie and Taylor Swift. Whoops. Whoops, we're way back in the 1950s again, where women are sort of have this cliche role, and they're stuck in a certain way of being. And yeah,
I mean, just because just to contrast this, there's a movie from Jim Jarmusch, I think from 15 years ago. It's called Only Lovers Left Alive. It's with
Tom Hiddleston, a good one.
And Tilda Swinton. And so it's to vampires that kind of, he's kind of in a, you know, depressive, suicidal kind of state of mind. And they decide to meet in Tangier in Morocco. Yep. And they go into this bar, and there's a female singer there. I don't know if you remember her. And so this female singer sings, you know, a beautiful song. And that's a full-fledged woman. You know, there's everything there. There's, you know, kind of beauty, artistry.
There's shipwrecks. And
do you remember that woman, that singer?
I do have her memory of it, yeah.
Yeah, and so this song that she sings that, you know, brings the Tom Hiddleston character basically back to life, although he's a vampire. But he gets hungry again. He wants more life because she accesses, you know, the dark side of humanity and gives it to him, and it's beautiful. That's a woman, you know, that's a, as an image, but we're not looking for that. You know, it's an amazing movie scene, really. It's like, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the culture is always swinging back and forth, you know, between positive and negative, right? And we're in a very negative space right now. It's like nothing, we're in a very negative, hyper-controlled kind of space. At the same time, we're in total chaos. It's like it's something like that.
Yeah.
And then it will swing back, and something will open, and we'll have a bit of art again. And then that'll shut down very quickly as it becomes corporatized and manipulated. And it just opens, and then it shuts down, and then it opens, and then it shuts down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just kind of the way culture goes.
Yeah.
So the Barbie moment is kind of hilarious, because I guess I think Alex Ebert talks about that. It's like total compression and noise.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Total loss of anything of interest there. And then you start to become hungry for the future, for something new, for a new kind of expression.
Yeah. So going back to the question that you asked like 20 minutes ago, so in terms of success, you know, and the relationship between the conscious and the unconscious, do you strive to be, to become conscious in the collective mind, or
no?
Or never. What do you do?
Never. You only play the game when you have to, you know?
Right.
Otherwise, you just work on your art and get it as good as you can get it. And then play the game when you have to. Like if you need a little bit of money, you do a few courses, you try to get a viral video, you play the game a little bit, but as long as that doesn't become the whole thing, because if that became the whole thing, then you're just heading for Taylor Swift wasteland, you know?
Yeah, but you're still part of the whole swarm. You know, you can't escape this basic mechanism and this basic dialectic between the conscious and the unconscious. So at least part of your endeavors have to be guided by the illusion, let's say, that your actions matter for the whole thing to move, and thereby it is a striving towards the apex of the pyramid.
Yeah, but what pyramid are we talking about, right? Is it that pyramid or another pyramid? Like,
well, I don't want to be Taylor Swift, you know, again. So
yeah,
I
so we're not striving to be part. We're striving, but you know, it's like if you're talking about religion, like okay, I think that's when okay, then you figure out that whole game is samsara, and you don't play that game.
Yeah, but
you try to play another kind of game within samsara, It's not like you reject samsara or you know, go and live on a mountain somewhere. It's that you try to play another kind of game within samsara to kind of break the matrix or find the glitches in the matrix or sort of find the quantum leaps rather than you know, be a slave and carry your your pack up the mountain, because you're going to fail if you go in that way.
Yeah, I would describe it somewhat that you, as long as you're part of this little world, you have to play the game, but you have to be aware that it's just a, you know, a little world.
Yeah, well, you have to be aiming at the bigger world.
Right.
The little world is something you do on the side. If you,
I mean this world, the material world, this world of this kind of mechanism, you know, this world that is always in conflict, always has problems, always is kind of in a state of war, let's say.
Yeah, and you can't perfect that, or you will be able to, and it's always going to be a state of
designed to war. Be in conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as long as we are alive, we have to play by the rules that, you know, this little world kind of operates in. And so that means that we are embedded within the dynamic.
I would kind of question that, but
what would you question?
That you have to play the rules by which this you're like, you're destined to play some, that's kind of like, that feels too predetermined to me.
But
you're also, you're making the rules, you're making values at the same time in the Nietzschean sense. And yeah, you're also working within a certain physics.
I'm not talking about specific values. I'm talking about this kind of dialectic between what's conscious in the culture and what's not. Mm. You know, so for example, you know, it's like if you look at our podcast, it's part of the collective conscious and unconscious.
Yeah,
in that kind of sense, and it's all fine and dandy to perfect our way of doing it and you know, to be able to express it more precise what we want to say, but at the same time the dialectic kind of makes sure that there is a drive towards the conscious that you mm-hmm. know, so, and that's what
that
I
makes
mean,
sense to me. Yeah.
That we want, you know.
That makes total sense.
But it's
sense
still
to
it's
me.
Still part of the game, and so it's.
But
like,
the conscious is not Taylor Swift, is what I keep saying. It's just that's the unconscious.
There are different pyramids. There are different pyramids. You know, there's, you know, and I think like where we are moving, the top of the pyramid is inhabited by, I don't know, Lex Friedman and Joe Rogan and those kinds of people that inhabit our particular kind of, you know, apex of the pyramid.
Well, those are not my particular models.
No, but I mean, if we're talking about podcasting, we're not talking about tennis, you know?
We're talking about podcasting. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, so the top podcasters, right? So we're working to be great podcasters. Those are the guys who are doing it the best. And, you know, the guy I like the most these days is this music producer, Rick Rubin. I think he's the ultimate podcaster. He's got the perfect voice.
Yeah,
he's empathetic and smart, and he asks the right question at the right time. He blows me away in his sort of. He's not like us. He's not. We are wrestling with these things. He doesn't wrestle. He's right in the background, and he knows
what
to do.
It's true.
We are wrestling with ideas here, which is a different kind of occupation, I think, than being what he is. He's like the ultimate sort of coach or something.
You know what the difference is? Your voice and the depth of your voice. I mean, if you change your way of speaking into the phone like this, all right, let's talk about, you know, let's talk about how things are now, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he's already at the top.
Oh no, let's
of the pyramid.
Try it for 5 minutes. Let's try it for 5 minutes and see where we go with this.
He's already at the top of the pyramid, so he has nowhere to go. You know, he's just doing it for pleasure, for fun.
That's amazing. Yeah, we will take.
He's already cool, so he doesn't have to try to be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It doesn't work with the German accent. I'm sorry, Tom. You're too German to make that. German's like,
yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, in terms of woman, I know that, you know, sometimes when I drink alcohol and then I get this, then I can go deeper with my voice. And that always does something to the women, you know. It's like, because it's like, it's, I don't know, it's just, it's another chakra, if you will.
Yeah, and whereas if you've got a really high voice, you're needy. You need something. If your voice is going up, you're like.
So let's work on our radio voice, you know, the golden voice.
And our deep voice, yeah.
And that's more slowly, we talk slowly.
Yeah.
And more assertive, you know, more confident. We know what we're talking about. You know,
fuck that. No, that's not me. It's a bit like, again, like I think of the archetypes of Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan had this shrill, grating, irritating voice.
Yeah.
Cutting through things, right? Leonard Cohen had this, and he wrote songs fast. He did everything in this manic kind of a way.
Yeah.
And I think the Beats did that. You know, they're kind of manic, and they get into a shamanic state of manic expression, where they're not necessarily accurate, and every word is not completely clear, but it's more about the gestalt, whereas Leonard Cohen is like, he's every single word is in the right place and in the right tone and is spoken at, almost like he's just talking. He's not in a hurry. You're still doing it?
Yeah, no. But I think you're completely right, because it's different archetypes. Because I, for myself, I like to get into the mood, into the groove. And so I push forward with you in order to get to the state where not every word is correct, and where most of the theories that we conjure up are bullshit. But it's kind of interesting to get to the point where we get like creative and find some new gems in the dirt, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's my approach, and I really like that. But then again, you have also, you know, this kind of Rick Rubin and Leonard Cohen kind of people that are so precise, like every word is like a knife a hot knife that goes through butter, you know.
Yeah.
And
but it's interesting that Rick Rubin produced the most chaotic kind of dark types of artists, who are almost the opposite of his personality. You know, he was able to contain all those guys, like, you know, I don't know what, the Beastie Boys or something.
Without any training, that's a crazy thing, because just with taste, that's how he described. He has no proper musical education. He doesn't know how to play the guitar or the piano. He said in one podcast, it's just taste. So he goes in and he hears and he feels what should be, you know, what the music should be. That's insane to me. That's just raw talent.
Yeah, it's just a talent. It's just an ear for what is alive, what matters, what is real, what is like, what is penetrating. But also being able to see that other people don't see, right? You know, it's like an ability to see beyond the horizon in some way.
Right.
Because other people can't see that horizon, right? They can't see that this, I don't know, this weird group, the Beastie Boys, would be have any talent whatsoever, but he could see that they mattered in some kind of a way, or he could pull out the essence of Johnny Cash, right? The absolute essence of his work, without any of the bells and whistles, and without trying to embellish it or put a lot of effects.
Yeah,
he captures the essence of that particular artist, and he could do that with so many different artists of so many different genres.
So was he a visionary? Because I think like Rosen ask this question on the mail server, the IDW mail server list. And
yeah.
So like, what is a visionary?
And it's one, somebody who sees beyond the horizon. That's what my answer would be.
Right. So he would be a visionary. I think like Timothy Leary, I still think he's a visionary, or he was a visionary, you know, George Orwell, but it's kind of hard to find, a visionary that it's like a pure visionary that does nothing else, because you could just say like Rick Rubin is a music producer, and being a visionary is part of the whole shebang of the equation. You know, so
yeah,
what
there's
is
a, there's like a prophetic element to that. It's like seeing something that could be in the future.
Yeah.
So what is so you're asking what is a visionary? Yeah, a visionary is somebody, a prophetic, who could see the essence of something and see it being birthed into the future, something like that.
Yeah, the shape, shape of things to come, basically.
They can see the shape of something, right? Because often we don't see the shape, we just see the chaos or the lines or the, we see something cool and we get like, I think he has a sort of detachment as well. It's like, I remember him saying that there was this band and they obviously played a great song, like they had an amazing moment.
Yeah.
I can't remember which band it was that he was recording. And he was like, yeah, just go on to the next song. He wasn't like attached. He didn't get attached to the one thing. He was always moving on to the next thing. That's also something that Miles Davis did. He invented sort of cool jazz and modal jazz, and then he went on to the next thing. He didn't stay with that and keep repeating. So, in a way, like the visionary is somebody who never repeats themselves. They never get caught in a cliche. They never get caught in their own frames. They're able to break the frame constantly into something new, or they're all able to deepen the frame that they already have. But they never get stuck in Taylor Swift land of, you know, creating products.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting that you contrast that with Taylor Swift, because I think people like David Bowie, they represent acquired taste, because you can't consume David Bowie like you can consume Taylor Swift, because he famously changed the songs every time he sang them. And so you have to develop an ear for things like that.
Well, you have to be able to ride the protean sort of change, waves of change, instead of, oh, I've got this good thing and I'm just going to keep doing it forever, like the stupid Rolling Stones. They just keep doing the same stupid act. You know, even if they do it well, it's they lost their creativity sometime in 1972 or 74, and they just keep repeating the same sort of empty ritual, and people love that because it was good then. So the whole modus operandi is nostalgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
I always like the Grateful Dead because every.
What are you saying that Rolling Stones and Taylor Swift operate on the same?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what was once rebellious was the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones were rebellious. Now they're the ultimate paragon of corporate culture, and you know.
Yeah.
You know, their tickets are expensive. You get what you pay for. It's a packaged deal. Whereas if you go to see like Dead and Company, the Grateful Dead, every show is completely different. They change their songs around. There's an improvisational element. There's a moment that you'll get that will be so unique to that particular night. You know.
I mean, talking about the shape of things to come, I wonder how much we are confined and limited by the short amount of time that we are on this planet. You know, so you and me, I'm watching all these 70s movies recently, because like William Friedkin died, and so he made these amazing movies. He did like The French Connection and then The Exorcist, and then he did like Sorcerer, which is an amazing movie, and like one of the missing links between, you know, the 70s auteur cinema and the, you know, beginning of the 80s John Carpenter kind of thing. And so these, and then you have Scorsese and you have The Godfather and all of these kinds of movies that came up in the 70s, and we don't make these kinds of products and these kinds of artworks anymore, and they kind of stood the test of time. And I'm wondering if such a creative phase, you know, if it be like in movies or in television or music or literature, will come back at some point, or if auteur cinema basically is dead now. You know, we have Napoleon from Ridley Scott coming up. He's like 85. Then the last, you know, the new Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon, he's also 85. That's presumably their last movies, and then it's over and out. It's done.
Well, maybe, you know? I mean, maybe some other form of a cinema or some other thing. I think that the problem is that the first is always the best, right? I had this friend named Rufus Wainwright. I knew this guy named Rufus Wainwright in Montreal, and his first song, he said, that was the best song I ever read. Everything else was just like a elaboration of that one thing I did. And
right.
And so the first is always the best. So you can't keep repeating the same thing over and over again. You can do semi-good, you can make semi-good auteur type movies, but you'll never make The Godfather again. And so you have to do something new. I mean, and of course there's always something new. There's always creative spirit. There's always Shakti. There's always, you know, there's always something new coming out. There's always, I think it's an illusion to think, oh yeah, everything. We always think the culture died, but it hasn't. It might be in a low point, but there'll be a new thing that will come, you know. And
that's what I mean. We're limited by our own worldview, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we tend to think everything is dead, like the day the music died, but it hasn't. Just there'll be a new thing. We just don't know what it is, and we can't see it, so that frustrates us.
Maybe it is Taylor
Swift. But Taylor Swift is the supernova. That's my theory of the pop era. It's like the end, because there's nothing there after that. It's like, okay. And then you have to do something different. You can't just...
That's interesting, because I have the same feeling with movies in general. Because
yeah,
like,
maybe with movies as well.
It's all shit. It's really all shit. And so maybe that's, you know, the tipping point where, you know, in the next 5 years, some new stuff, some radical new stuff will emerge, that it's like popping up, and we will just get the beginning.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. I think it has to, in fact. Like, I think it's something like that there has to be that movement is something like built into nature. There has to be this creative movement to break through the rigidity of dead forms.
Yeah.
It just has to, it has to come through, you know. Otherwise, there's just no reason to be alive, right? You know,
the interesting thing is movement
of something.
Because you were talking about, you know, the tarot card, the world, you know,
yeah.
And in Crowley's Thoth Tarot, that would be the Aeon, also kind of representing the transition from, you know, one world to another world, to a new
world in a
kind of way. And so
it's the end, it's the completion of one movement, of a big movement.
Yeah,
it's the completion, and then the new movement begins, the new eon begins, or the new, yeah. I mean, it does feel that we're sort of in that in-between world's place, doesn't it?
So, but are you saying that Taylor Swift is the woman in the tarot card, the world?
Because I think she's more like the anti-world. But she's like tapping into that. She's using that. She's like that. She's like that has been, that is, in a way, yes. Why not give her a yes? Why not go Taylor? So we can get to the end of this particular movement. Shake It Off, Taylor, or whatever.
Yeah, Shake It Off.
Shake it up. Or I don't know the song. I'm old.
Get some dick.
Keep shaking it, Taylor. Keep shaking for a bit. And then maybe something new will come after you.
Yeah.
Go, Taylor.
Yeah, go. Go and find some dick and become strength and lust again.
I just hope she doesn't go the road of Madonna. That's what I hope, because Madonna did have genuine edgy sexuality in the beginning.
Oh yes.
And then she's just become a caricature of herself.
Yeah.
So I hope she goes out with dignity, good old Taylor.
Same goes for Britney Spears, you know. So if you haven't seen the recent videos, that's not healthy what she's doing.
Oh no, yeah. No, we don't want 50-year-old women to be shaking their ass around. It's just, I'm sorry, I approve of it in your private bedroom space.
But I don't think she's 50. I think, like, what is Britney Spears, like 32? I don't know. Let's see. Britney Spears. She can't be 50.
She should become a tough matriarchal woman, you know.
She's 41. Okay.
41, yeah. But I mean, she lived a lot, right? So she probably aged faster than most of us would. So, I think, like, settle down, become a matriarch, become a powerful, you know, figure and for your family, and And stop trying to shake your ass on MTV. That's over.
MTV still exists?
I don't know. Whatever. That's the original sort of archetype, yeah. I guess, would be video, right?
I'm too old.
And then sexy videos know. And I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. But I find it interesting because it's like we all kind of, I always think that we're living in a fractal world. You know, the laws mm-hmm. that apply on one part of the world also applies on different parts of the world and in different strata and kind of. And so this issue, this topic of the shape of things to come that recently come on different angles and to different parts of my world. I think yeah. we're really in a point of transition, really.
Yeah. And I think we should notice that everything we see on Facebook is a lie or Twitter or like most of it. I was looking, there's these pictures, Paris, for example, Paris, France, right? There's yeah. some problems in France. There's a lot of immigration, etc.
Yeah.
And there's tough things going on in the suburbs. And but I've seen all these right wing bloggers. They're putting out pictures of Paris as if it looks like, you know, Sudan or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like Sudan. It's got beautiful streets and new cafes and there's yeah. a lot of homeless people. Yes, that's not good. But it's not near even close to San Francisco. It's completely safe to walk the streets. You know, Paris yeah. is still a city. It's but you get all these lies all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and of what reality is just because people take a little snapshot or a moment.
Yeah, I don't think immigration is a problem though. I think it's and I don't. I mean, it's on a personal level. It's always horrifying what these, you know, people on the streets go through in a kind of sense. But going back to Slaughter Deck, they're all part of this societal kaleidoscope.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And so,
and you know, one, you don't want, you know, the only what's the word I'm looking for? The only homogenous culture these days is like North Korea. So get used to a kaleidoscope.
Yeah, the same goes for China. You know, all the presumptions that we have about China with the social credit system and, you know, all these kinds of things. That's, you know, if you read into it, all of this is, you know, not true. You know, so we're like our view on these countries, if it be like Paris or, you know, as a city or China or whatever, that's like, or if you go to Philadelphia, it's supposed to be like a fentanyl hell. You know, that's not what Philadelphia is about. You know, there may be, so and
yeah. Well, maybe the American cities are pretty edgy. It seems to me, much but more than Europe. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know about all that. It's hard to, again, it's just assume that everything's a lie. That you're get all the information you're getting is mostly a lie.
So the truth you get only,
and then you'll
here,
be okay.
You know, the only
What's
truth,
that?
The only true truth you need, you get here on the Parallax View.
Exactly. The only truth is like me and you, Tom. It's like John Lennon, Yoko and me.
Yeah.
I don't believe in this. I don't believe in
yeah,
that.
It's yeah, exactly.
And,
I don't believe.
Me and Tom. Me and Yoko and John.
I don't believe in Instagram.
I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe in Dylan. I don't believe in Beatles.
Yeah.
I don't believe in me.
I
don't believe in Taylor Swift.
Me.
I don't believe in Barbie. I just believe in me, Tom and me.
There you go, Andrew. Yeah.
Well, this was a glorious finale of
exactly.
a good conversation.